Welcome to the MMA Podcast, June 22nd, TMP 206. A ton on the docket today, but of course, first I gotta pass it to the man sitting about, let's see, I think I'm facing like north now, so that put you like, what, 1,500 miles to my left. I'm in Florida, you're in Cali, he's on Twitter at Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, what's going on, brother?
Oh, Big Jake, it's a thankful Thursday over here in Southern California. We're getting a little reprieve from the heat, down from the 120 yesterday.
About that shit. What the fuck is going on over there?
Oh man, it's terrible, really. The whole Nevada, Arizona, California, the desertous regions of California. Anyways, it's a little rough. It's a little rough, but you know what? So we're thankful. We're about 115 today instead of 120. So it's a cool day. Shouldn't be too bad. And man, had some hot action over the weekend, and lots of action coming up for this coming weekend. So ready to break it down with you as always, man.
Pat, you, as long as I've known you, and probably as long as I will know you, you are the forever optimist. You literally just said, like, hey, at least it's not 120, it's 115. It could be worse. We could literally just be dying. Like, at what point, because I grew up in Florida, where, like, you get heat stroke, but that's just because it's, like, super humid, and it's, like, a swamp, and it's, like, 105 out. Yeah. I don't understand when I see the temperature, and, like, I read that it's, like, they take these official temperatures in the shade, too. So, like, at, I think, McCarran Airport in Vegas, which myself and maybe yourself will be in a couple weeks from now, in the shade at McCarran Airport, it was 116. Like, I feel like you're starting to get up into areas that just are not habitable to life. Not just human life, but you won't even see cockroaches out there. Everything dies.
Oh, the cactuses are dying. Yeah, the cactuses and the cockroaches are dying. It's a rough one. Yeah, exactly. Those are in the shade temperatures. You get into your car. My car temperature was saying 130. The other day, so
what?
Oh yeah, it's real. But God. Hey, that's all right. This is not the weather podcast. This is the MMA podcast. Damn it, must digress. But yeah, no, thankful today, cooling down.
Thankful. Wow, you're like I said, you are forever the optimist, and you are right too. This is
gotta be, bro.
This isn't the weather podcast. It's the MMA podcast. So we should get into it. Of course, you know, we've had all this Conor Floyd stuff going on. I don't think there's really been any more news about that, and you're gonna hear enough about Conor versus Floyd in the next 2 months. So I don't really think that's gonna be a topic today. We do have two events this weekend. It's gonna be a very good weekend for MMA fans. Of course, you have UFC Fight Night 112, which will be that Chiesa versus Lee card from the Chesapeake Energy Arena in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, home of Russell Westbrook and the Thunder. And, of course, going down also this weekend, and it's rare a weekend where the Bellator card upstages the UFC card, but I think they're doing this weekend's UFC card on Sunday for a reason. The UFC card kicking off June 25th, Sunday. I believe I can check really quick just to double check on the times for you here, but the UFC will kick off the main card at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, the early prelims at 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 p.m. Pacific. But Bellator's got the bigger event. They've got the Saturday slot. They've got the pay-per-view, and man, it's going to be fun. You got Aaron Pico making his MMA debut, Douglas Lima and Michael Chandler defending their belts, a big light heavyweight scrap between two former UFCers and Phil Davis and Ryan Bader. And we haven't even gotten to the main and co-main event. Chael Sonnen versus Wanderlei Silva, Fedor versus Matt Mitrione, fights that have both been scheduled for cards before this one, but for various reasons fell out, and now we get to finally see it. Chael Sonnen versus Wanderlei Silva, we were initially supposed to see, I guess about 3 years ago, back at UFC 175, International Fight Week 2014. Initially was going to be Chael Sonnen versus Wanderlei Silva. And that whole debacle turned into just like a giant mess. You had Wanderlei run out on a drug test. You had Chael and Vitor, I think, both fail their drug tests. I think Wand got kicked from the card. Then it was going to be Chael versus Vitor. Then they both failed tests. Then Chael got kicked from his seat on the desk at UFC Tonight. And ended up parting ways with the UFC for good. Wanderlei went off to do Wanderlei things for a while. Both of them ended up back in Bellator. Fedor versus Matt Mitrione we were supposed to see much more recently, but Matt Mitrione had to pull out, I think, like the day of the fight due to some health issues. I think the guy, if I'm not misremembering it, I think he had like some bad kidney stone problems with, which, hey, if you tell, I don't care how psyched up I was for the Fedor fight. If you are having kidney stone problems, you get a pass. Because I could not imagine what it's like to piss out a sand spur, like a sharp rock. Just, oh my God. Terrible.
No, the agony.
I mean, yeah, I was, yeah. No reason to go into detail on that. But, yeah, we will get to Bellator. We will get to this weekend's UFC. But as we usually do, let's start with last weekend's UFC. A rare morning card. I think the main card kicked off at 8 a.m. Eastern. So if you're an early riser and you popped on Fox Sports 1, you may have enjoyed a nice, rare, early UFC. Myself, I was on the East Coast. Like, for the West Coasters, it was just about impossible to watch. I mean, waking up at 5 a.m. for fucking anything? No, thank you. But it was watchable on the East Coast, even though I will admit, as someone who does an MMA podcast, I probably should have woken up and watched that thing live. But what good is UFC Fight Pass for? I ended up sleeping in and watching it later. It was a good card, though, actually. I guess we'll start with a prelims, which admittedly I caught the highlights of, and not much else. But hey, there were a lot of interesting highlights. You had Walt Harris, Alex Caceres, and Russell Doan all scoring KOs or TKOs. Two submission victories by John Tuck. And a comeback from behind. I believe Olka Sasaki was an underdog against Justin Scoggins. Sasaki and Tuck both.
One of the biggest of the night.
Yeah. Tuck and Sasaki both locking in rear naked chokes to defeat Takanori Gomi and Justin Scoggins, respectively. Anything on the prelims stand out to you? I guess Li Jingliang, Frank Camacho, and Olka Sasaki all won $50,000 bonuses. Frank and Lee for the fight of the night, Olka for performance of the night.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of great stuff on the preliminary card. John Tuck, his nickname should be John Truck because he trucked Takanori Gomi, hey yo, very quickly in the less than 90 seconds, hit him with I want to say it was a good front kick to the body, had him hurt, put the hands on him, got to the back, got the rear naked choke super quick.
Should be called John Fuck because he fucked him up.
Zing!
Zing! We keep it R-rated on the MMA podcast.
That's
go
right.
Fuck yourself.
I mean, man, Walt Harris and Cyril Asker, that one was, Cyril landed like a good shot or two, but Walt Harris, man, ended up destroying him, landed a good, I want to say, I don't remember if it was a right or left that dropped him, but as soon as he dropped him, the Bose, man, swole him up real quick. Great job by the referee intervening right there. Caceres versus Rolando D, that was a good one. Caceres punched him like right on the eye, almost straight out the gate. That really had a D's vision hurt. Caceres really put some good strikes together, a good game overall. And the doctor just, or I'm sorry, I want to say that the doctor was telling the referee that he was good to fight, but the referee said, no, bullshit, this fight's over. And, you know, I couldn't fault him for that. I mean, with if a fighter's eye is closed, you know, we see these things go on all the time. And whether they should or should not is a great debate. But when you're erring on the side of fighter safety, I've said before, you know, it's rare that I'll get mad with a referee for doing so. So just stoppage there. Man, Justin Scoggins falling to Olga Sasaki should not have been such a widespread on this one. If I would have realized, man, I might have even dropped a little coin on Sasaki. Such a huge flyweight. Scoggins has had, as good as his wrestling is for flyweight, some of the grappling aspects, he has fallen short. And Sasaki, man, he was getting tooled pretty much the entire fight by Scoggins in spite of his large reach and height advantage. Scoggins was able to put the hands and the kicks on him very well. Had, a really nice spinning back kick to the ribs that really hurt him. And just at one point, second round, little slip up. He was controlling the grappling too, Scoggins. Scoggins, he was controlling most of the action with his wrestling, but just had a slip up. And Sasaki, that was all he needed. Scrambled, took the back, choked him out. Great come from behind for Sasaki there. And the leech, man, his last name I struggle with, but Lee the Leech, I'll just stick with that. Defeating Frank Camacho. That was a great back and forth. Camacho hurt Lee pretty good in the first round. Definitely put some heavy strikes on him. And then after that, he might have just punched himself out. Old Lee the Leech, he came back and was really putting it on Frank himself for the next two rounds. Very nice fight back and forth. Russell Doan, KO and Kwon Ho Kwok in devastating, a pretty short fashion. Just putting some devastating strikes together to get it done early. Very entertaining grappling bout as well between Naoki Inu. I'm struggling with that one. And Carl's John de Tomas. Fun fight there. As well as the women's bantamweight card that kicked it off. Lucy. I'm just going to say Lucy and G. I'm not doing good with these names on this card. Good fight there as well, though. Very scrappy fight. Those ladies were definitely standing and banging, as they say. So yeah, really from top to bottom, I enjoyed the preliminary card for UFC Fight Night 111. Oh, but what about you, Jake?
Oh, my friend, I was muted. I'll have to edit that long bit of silence out.
My
out
friend.
Of post. I've well. To take you behind the scenes here. Usually, I've got my Yeti mic and everything set up back at my apartment, but I am on the road. Hopefully, that doesn't pick up the phone ring in the background right now. But I am using like this weird USB gamer headset that has both a mute like the speakers button and mute the microphone button. So I have fucked up and muted like you instead of myself or vice versa. So a little oopsie daisy there, but let's move up to the main card. I think the first fight went the way that we expected it to. Rafael Dos Anjos, a former champion, moving up a weight class, taking on Tarek Saffedin. Pretty one-sided there. Rafael Dos Anjos, just, I mean, the footwork's there, the movement's there, and I'm interested to see how he does against more top-level welterweight opponents. You know, Tarek's a good gatekeeper, and RDA has now passed this test. We'll see what he can do at 170. Colby Covington, even though he was the favorite, I think you and I both were kind of, I think you ended up picking Covington, right? But we both were giving Kim a better chance than Vegas. Kim, you know, historically very good wrestling defense. And it was a clear 30-27 for Colby. Just did a very good job, I guess, game planning for this fight. Must have seen a hole in Kim's game somewhere. Took advantage of it. And yeah, I was impressed. The final fight, Marcin Tybura, Andrei Arlovsky. I gave Tybura a 10-8 first round. I believe, if I remember this fight correctly, I gave Tybura a 10-8 first round because he just put it to him. I gave Arlovsky the second round and Tybura the third round. So I think I scored it 29-27. But once again, the right person was awarded the unanimous decision in this fight. Three decisions, Tybura, Covington, and RDA, all coming out on top. This Kim, not in really that much trouble now. His loss to Colby Covington, his only loss in his last four fights. But Tarek Saffin and Andrei Arlovsky. Tarek, this is loss number three in a row. He's lost four of his last five. Andrei Arlovsky, even worse. He has lost five fights in a row now. So, man, it's rare for a guy to look as good as he did. He joins the UFC, goes 4-0, and now has lost his last five. Although all five to good opponents, and this being the first of the five where he didn't get finished, another loss. Not looking too good there for the Pitbull, Andrei Arlovsky. What do you make of the wins by RDA, Covington, and, you know, I guess the one upside of the Tybura-Arlovsky fight is, like I've said before, the heavyweight division needs some fresh faces, and Marcin Tybura, I believe he's like, what, 29 or something? 31? The 6'3" Pole from Unijau, Poland, I think, now on a three-fight winning streak. Let's see what he can do.
Heck yeah, 31 years old. That's young enough. We'll take it. We'll take it for the UFC heavyweight division. You know what? And it's funny, too. I went 9-3 on the card on Saturday. And two of the ones that I had gotten incorrect were on the main card. And I had actually picked Saffin over Dos Anjos. I thought Saffin with the height and reach would be able to make it tricky for Dos Anjos. But you know what, man? Rafael came out looking very good at 170. As you mentioned, had the movement going. Strikes were really being put together well, and he was not having an issue. Put it on the very crafty striker, Tarek Saffin. Definitely an impressive showing, and it seems like we do have a lot of the shorter, stockier guys going to 170 pounds, so a lot of guys with comparable frames in the division with Dos Anjos. But yeah, definitely a good start for him there in that victory. And then as far as Tybura versus Arlovsky, I think I was picking with my heart there. I had picked Arlovsky over Tybura. Man, I thought, and you know, I want to say there was a couple moments. I mean, in Arlovsky, he hung tough. He didn't get finished. Man, almost had that one. But yeah, young blood came in, took him out. It was a very good fight, very hard fought fight. It was a heavyweight fight that went the distance, and I wasn't, you know, completely disappointed. It was good action for the whole way through, as was Colby Covington versus Dong Young Kim, the fight before it. Old Chaos finally got a fight. I know he had talked about having trouble getting fights in the UFC, just saying people didn't want to fight him. And you could see why in this one. He was all over Dong Young Kim, pretty much start to finish. 30-25, 30-26, 30-27 scores. Unanimous decision for Covington over Kim. Really looks like a good prospect. Just 29 years old, a pretty young himself. 12-1 in his career. Yeah, definitely seems to have a lot of upside. And yeah, definitely thought it was a pretty good performance there.
So bringing us to the main event, which unfortunately I was able to avoid all of the results except for the main event. I was talking to... Actually, I think I was watching ESPN. And like SportsCenter came on, and they randomly just showed the head kick knockout clip. And I was like, ah! But you know what? That's what I get for watching TV when watching ESPN, watching fucking SportsCenter when I'm trying to avoid a sports result. I mean, I'm tired of all these people, you know, oh, you spoil this for me. That's not right. Fucking the Reddit MMA, like 48 hours after an event, you're not supposed to talk about any of the results in the topic because, you know, spoilers. We don't want anyone to have a fight spoiled. Like, if you don't want a fight spoiled, don't go on the Reddit MMA. Don't go on Twitter. Turn off your social media. It's very, very simple. Everyone's not in charge of catering to your needs because you decided to watch it later. Random segue about spoilers aside, this was a better fight than everyone was making it out to be, because I kind of got it spoiled, and I was chatting with a friend of mine, the Jew, Ross Finkelstein, and I was like, yeah, I got the Holm fight spoiled, but nothing else, so you can talk about that if you want. And he's like, yeah, Holm fucked her up. And every report I saw was all just about Holm dominates. And not that that wasn't an awesome KO, and not that Holm put a exclamation point on that fight, on that win with a knockout. But I don't think Holly Holm won rounds one or two. I think round one was 10-10. I thought round two went to bitch. Like, Holm was fighting out of a corner. Holm essentially needed to win two out of the three rounds at the end. And if she really wanted to be sure she won, she needed to win all three. So she went out there a minute nine into the third round. Looked Rousey-esque the way that left head kick landed, and sent her opponent to the mat. Bitch Kohea. Look, I'm not about fighter bashing, because what it takes to be a fighter is, A, a lot of hard work, a lot of practice time, and to get down on someone for that is a bitch move, and to get down on someone for not performing well in a fight, these people don't get paid much, let's be honest, and they go out and perform. And what's my favorite sport, Pat, what's probably yours, what's probably a lot of people listening to this, I'm not going to start to try and bash UFC fighters. With that being said,
But,
bitch Kohea fucking sucks. Let's, like, she does not, like, how do I put this nicely? She should not be in the UFC. The fact that she is in the UFC shows a glaring lack of depth, not just in the women's bantamweight division in the UFC, but just in women's MMA in general. Like, the fact that bitch Kohea fought for a title is insane. I don't know. It's, you know, she just doesn't, I don't know, I think she's almost like a Leonard Garcia. She throws almost blindly and knocks out chicks who are even worse than her, but you match her up against anyone like a Holly Holm, I do not fucking understand how Holly Holm didn't win rounds one or two. Holm being like a world-class elite boxer, kickboxer, MMA artist, and bitch just, you know, with pure aggression, ended up winning those rounds. But Holm, I think the better fighter, ended up winning, getting that head kick knockout. I don't know what's next for Holm, because her last fight, she went up to 145 and fought Germaine de Randamie, which, you know what, let's save all of that Germaine de Randamie featherweight belt stuff. Because that actually is a topic in itself, and we actually have a fight announcement to talk about too. So let's I guess stick to the fight before we move on. But yeah, any thoughts on Holm versus bitch, the main event, before we move on here, I guess?
Well, I agree with you. It was definitely the better fighter that won, and it's got to be something between the ears of Holly Holm, or. Because, I mean, really, if you look at her fight with Raquel Pennington, she got outboxed and probably should have lost her fight with Raquel Pennington.
Great example. Great example.
And not.
And Holm is like the most decorated female boxer of all time.
Pretty much. one of the most elite that there's ever been in the sport, and just got chumped in that fight. And yeah, this one, certainly it was, she was getting popped by Betch. Ultimately, you know, and I mean, they were both being warned for timidity and things like that. And it was like, was Holly Holm legitimately worried about being knocked out by Betch Kohea? I mean, was she worried about the ground game or some ground and pound, or, you know, really, this is, it was very, you know, it was a very cautious approach, but, I guess that could also be a combination of what happened with her fight, with Misha Tate, you know, where she was winning the whole fight and then just, you know, perhaps got a little lackadaisical and gave it up and got submitted at the end. So maybe that led to this ultra cautious approach. But I mean, ultimately it did pay off. In round three, she came through with that head kick knockout. Yeah, that was almost exactly like the Ronda Rousey knockout, except Betch kind of, what, she kind of landed on her ass, didn't she? She just sat right on her ass after that head kick. Holly Holm rushed in and just landed a nice little, it was like a handball shot. It wasn't even really the best punch. It was like if you were trying to do a slicey in handball. Shouts out to handball. I don't know if our listeners remember that game or if anybody remembers a slicey or what the hell I'm talking about. But anyways, it was kind of one of those moves right to the jaw, just sat her down. Fantastic finish. You know, the referee had warned them for timidity in the fight. It was so slow. The fans certainly weren't really enjoying that fight too much up until that knockout. But I mean, hey, she came through and finally showed off that world class credential with just that pinpoint stoppage there.
Indeed, yeah, and that brings us back to I guess that wraps up the fight recap and brings us to that women's 145 belt, because Holly Holm initially was going to fight, or initially did fight Germaine de Randamie for it, lost, GDR becomes the champion, claims she has an injury. Then after a little while, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be honest here. I'm never going to fight Cyborg. Which, I actually had a couple back and forths with people on Twitter about this. And if you, you know, if you want to tweet me your thoughts, I'm always open to get in a civil debate. You know, I'll go back and forth with you over a given topic, but it's so weird on Twitter. You literally can't disagree with some people without them like taking it personally and turning it into a flame war. And you'll be like, I mean, even some of these like quote MMA journalists who take themselves so seriously, and I'm not going to name names, Jonathan Snowden, Luke Thomas, but you know, some of these guys have just the most sensitive egos. And if you challenge them on anything, they will turn it into a personal attack. So I'm not trying to get in flame wars here. If you, you know, tweet me about how ugly my mom is, I'll probably throw the block button up. But no, I was going back and forth with somebody who listens to the show, and I'm actually going to pull the Twitter up so I can give them a little shout out here. The RCK at Fight Savant. We had an interesting discussion because they, and I'll say they because I assume it's a dude, but you never know. I called AMS a dude for the longest time before I realized that she was Lexi and Tito's mom. So you never know. Homie said, talking about Germaine de Randamie and her refusing to fight Cyborg. I don't care for GDR, but I 100% get her point. Cyborg is a known drug user, in all likelihood, has permanently physically altered her composition as a woman. Maybe she's clean as a whistle today, but the changes are done. She changed physically due to steroids. So, you know, I mean, to me, the question you ask after that is like, so what, Cyborg, you just give her a lifetime ban because she got popped for taking steroids once? I do like how we've stiffened up the penalties for testing hot on steroids. I think you should be out a matter of years. I think the John Jones suspension, the whoever suspension, if you're trying to cheat in this sport, it's way different than any other sport for reasons you've heard me talk about on this show. You've heard probably Joe Rogan talk about on his show. You know, in baseball, you roid up, you can hit a ball farther, big whoop. In MMA, you roid up, you can punch a guy harder, you can cause more damage to his brain, you can kill him. I mean, you know, we've had instances very recently, which we will get to in a little bit, some tragic news coming from Canada. But, you know, there's, I don't know, I do agree, steroids are very, very serious. But I draw the line, I don't think you know, once you test hot once, you can't kick them out of the sport forever. I mean, what, Alistair Overeem? Like, think about all of the fighters who have tested hot. John Jones, Brock fucking Lesnar, Anderson Silva. I mean, if you really make a list of the top 50 MMA fighters of all time, I bet you 20 of them have popped hot. And 19 of those tests belong to Vitor. No, but a lot of fighters have pissed hot. And it's already gonna be hard enough to convince people to enter MMA as an athlete and put your brain and body on the line and to, you know, have lifetime bans. I don't know about that. So I think with Jermaine de Randamie, the answer is either you give everyone who tests hot a lifetime ban, or you don't let champions pick and choose. You can't have a champion saying, oh yeah, this number one contender, I'm not going to fight him. And I also got tweets back saying, oh yeah, well, what about Bisping? He's refusing to fight Yoel Romero. What about Conor McGregor? He's refusing to fight Tony Ferguson or Habib. And to that I say, no, they're not. If Bisping came out one time and said, I refuse to fight Yoel Romero ever because he's a cheater, guess what? He'd probably get his belt stripped, just like GDR. There are coy ways to go about dodging an opponent, and I'm not saying anyone who dodges an opponent should be stripped of the belt. You can dodge an opponent, but you got to have some tact to it, man. You can't just come straight out and be like, yeah, I'm never going to fight this person, so, oh well. Like, the last time I remember that even happening was when Fitch, Koscheck, and Swick were all butt buddies at AKA, and they all were, like, in the welterweight top 10, and they were refusing to fight one another. But that's a whole different issue. That's a completely, like, the opposite issue. That's because they're friends and teammates, and they don't want to fight each other, not because they're fucking... I mean, really, when it comes down to it, Jermaine de Randamie is scared as fuck of Cyborg Silva. Dude, I'm a 250-plus pound man. I would be afraid as fuck to fight Cyborg Santos. Chris Cyborg would beat the shit out of P-Money and I, probably at the same time. But, I don't know.
Man, I don't know about that.
Yeah, at the same time, actually, might... I don't know. Not,
Probably.
We would have a chance, but then we're getting into this weird chat where, I mean, it's a lose-lose. Either we're talking either we're talking about getting our asses beat by a woman, or even worse, we're talking about both of us beating up a woman, which I don't know
if we're going
to go down that road.
Yeah, let's not go down that road. That's a bad road.
But, long story short, so I am really not a fan of what Jermaine de Randamie did. I get it. I certainly understand it. But for her to be surprised that she got stripped is silly. And for you to compare, or not for you, but for anyone to compare Michael Bisping or Conor McGregor to that, it's like, okay, well, people have ducked fighters all the time. It doesn't mean they're coming straight out announcing formally that they'll never fight them. So Jermaine de Randamie fucked up. And I think as a result, we're now going to have, I think, I don't know if it's official yet, but they're aiming for UFC 214 for Megan Anderson to fight Cyborg Santos for the UFC featherweight belt, which has just been the biggest, like I don't know who is trying to run the featherweight division right now, but currently, like, if you think about how much sense it makes, you're not going to find much. You have Holly Holm, who went up there and fought once for the belt and now moved back down. You have Cyborg, who they fucking killed Cyborg. They made her cut to 140 twice. And I mean, you, like, there are videos out there of Cyborg trying to make 140 and, like, screaming in agony. Like, she is much big. Like, I think she, like, I think it's tough for her to cut to 145. So she's, like, dying at 140. They made her do that twice, seemingly now for no fucking reason. Because now in her third fight, she's going to be fighting at 145 for the belt. So I don't know what's going on with that. It's, you know, I don't know if there's ever been a division in the weight class that they think up and then the first ever champion is stripped because she refuses to fight people. But so far, women's featherweight has been an absolute shit show. But I did want to include that news about Cyborg and Megan Anderson. And I believe I actually, this is total conjecture, but I've heard rumblings of a Holly Holm versus Zingano fight, possibly at 45, possibly for number one contendership. And I saw on Instagram, I think Kat Zingano is, I don't know, she posted an Instagram story of her in an airport and then in a casino, which leads me to believe she's either in Vegas to talk with the UFC about stuff, or maybe in Oklahoma City to meet up with Dana or Holly or sign contracts. Who knows? But that is also floating out there. Kat Zingano herself hasn't fought a lot, but she's one of the few names you hear a lot as far as 135 fighters who could go up and join that very sparsely filled 145-pound weight class that I guess only has, what, three people in it now? Your stripped former champion and the two women about to fight for the title. So a lot of uninterrupted, continuous talking for me. Probably going to take a deep breath here, but what are your thoughts
on 145? You got this, Jake. Oh, man. Well, you know, I mean, you got to...
It's... Woosah. Ooh, I feel like gold dust now. Just bring it up.
Jake Walters.
Take it in.
Oh, man. You know, I mean, Duranda May, I'm surprised they didn't put together some other fight just to give her some time to perhaps reconsider this. I mean, of course, Cyborg Silva. Now I'm doing it. Cyborg Santos, she is.
Maybe she's dating Eric or Vanderlei or Anderson. Or
Some Silva. No, oh, well, see, damn it. Now I'm being racist. That's terrible.
Is it, though? But, I mean, Silva's a Brazilian last name. It's for sure bordering on racist, but I don't know if it's full on racist.
It's like the Brazilian Smith, they say, you know?
It is. Full on racist would me be trying to do a Portuguese accent on your MMA podcast.
Oh my god,
that's racist.
That's no. That's just quality pod.
I know about
but
that.
Really, I mean, Cyborg. She has been caught repeatedly with banned substances. It's not just she got caught one time. It's that one time she got caught was back in the Strike Force days. Strike Force hasn't been around for 5, 6, 7 years now.
Twenty years. It feels like
20. I know, right? When Strike Force, man, that feels like it went right along with WEC and Pride.
WCW.
Rest in peace. Oh man, it's Bash of the Beach, bro.
Oh yeah.
Hell yeah, bro.
Way too many inside jokes and WWE references in this episode.
Yeah, totally getting off track. But I can't believe they didn't put some other fight together just to, you know, I mean, maybe Zingano at 145 or, you know, the home rematch. I know there was a lot of controversy behind that. I mean, at least for me, she damn near knocked Holly Holm out after the second round was over with that shot after the bell. Granted, Holly Holm, you know, keep them hands up, head on a swivel. But still, that was quite a fight. They could have ran that back, but just gonna strip her and go the Cyborg Anderson route. I mean, bold move. UFC clearly giving no fucks. Clearly displaying that this division was crafted eventually for Cyborg. You know, they didn't want to do it right out the gate, you know, and make her feel special or anything, but they did create this division for Cyborg, as is evidenced by how things are transpiring. And, you know, again, I don't know. It's a very slippery slope. We're just getting into all kinds of PR nightmares today, Jake. You know, the Cyborg Santos issue and females and the testosterone and things like that. I mean, the retroactive therapeutic use exemption. I mean, come on. This is I can see why Duranda May is calling bullshit on a lot of this, if I'm being honest. And I could see, you know, I was sitting here thinking about it, and I said, Duranda May has to be able to piece Cyborg up. I mean, as far as stand-up skills, I mean, the Iron Lady, come on, bro. We saw Cyborg lose a Muay Thai match a year or two ago, it seems like. You can see the footage on there. And I said, Duranda May, she is a top-notch, world-class striker. I said, I feel like Duranda May could piece her up. But I said, you know, it's the Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It's the ground game, the ground and pound. Pardon me. And with Cyborg, she certainly, that is her proficiency. Of course, everybody, you know, everybody's scared of the striking, you know, of Cyborg. But really, it's not the striking. It's just the power. And Jake, we had touched on it just so slightly as far as skill discrepancies and skill gaps in women's mixed martial arts. Where a woman like Cyborg can be the scariest woman on the planet, knocking everybody out, when really her striking is not the most solid. It's just that she is a huge woman and she swings on things very violently and, you know, can occasionally connect. And she also has a very strong jaw that can take a lot of punishment as well. But you know, for me, I said Duranda May wins that stand-up battle. But anyway, if she were to get taken down, though, by Cyborg and face the ground and pound of Cyborg, I mean, I don't know. It's just slippery slope. Is that a fair playing field? You know, has she permanently altered herself? Who knows? I don't have Cyborg's yearbook photos or anything like that to pour back through to see things. And, I mean, the human body does change over time as well. So who's... then again, I don't know if females are ever really naturally as ripped as Cyborg gets, more lean than anything in a natural athletic form, most of the females. I don't know, man. It's, I think, you know, be that as it may, Duranda May now that she doesn't have the title, she has, lots of competitors who aren't Cyborg that she could face and, you know, worry about those fights and then take some time and figure out if she does want to fight Cyborg and does want a shot at getting her title back.
I wonder if we ever see Cyborg Rousey, because that for the longest time was the only real female fight people were really clamoring over. Ross, my buddy, brought up the idea of Rousey versus Carano, which that would make a big payday for
huge.
Yeah, so I don't know, you know, it's, I guess the ball is really in Rousey's court, depending on whether, I mean, there's obviously two big motivators there. There's the money and there's, you know, the whole pride thing. But I know, you know, everyone around Ronda seems like they don't want her to fight again. Dana says, you know, she probably won't fight again. I heard Chael say, you know, he talked to her. She's not a fighter. Even, you know, I, you know, these are people who don't dislike her. These are people who are on her squad saying that, yeah, she probably won't fight again. The way she went into the Nunes fight, there's no worse way a fighter could go into a fight. I mean, basically holding a grudge. I like, look, you can't ride the wave of stardom and be all smiley and, you know, do ads and be thrilled you have millions of followers because you win a bunch. Then you get knocked out in terrible fashion after a fight camp where, like, you were just bragging the entire time. I mean, what did she get? I remember the lead up, the embedded of Rousey Holm, and Rousey was getting her hands wrapped, and Edmund was writing, like, greatest of all time on her hand wraps and shit, and she was just wrapped up in her own legacy. And then when she fell, it's like she expected everyone to keep treating her like the champ. And yes, there were some very, very nasty things said to her and about her on Twitter. But guess what? There have been a lot of nasty things said about me on Twitter. And I'm fucking nobody. People have threatened me. They've called me shit, said shit about my family. And you know what? Random Twitter people, just like they do in reality on Twitter, they have no effect on my life. So I don't know how you're going to let some trolls, like, really affect your mood. And as far as the media went, I didn't see anybody. Like, I didn't see a single media person, from Ariel Helwani to Joe Rogan. And according to Joey Diaz, Rousey also had a big beef with Rogan, like, who probably was the fairest of all. Like, Rogan's not going to trash you for getting knocked out. And he's, you know, always, I've never heard Rogan, quote unquote, shit talk a fighter or besmirch a fighter or insult or say anything that could be taken as malevolent or demeaning or fighter bashing or anything to get offended over. So Rousey, I guess, anyone who just mentioned anything negative about her getting KO'd got put on her shit list, and oh, now she's gonna go and show. I mean, she just went into that fight with a negative mindset and obviously wasn't worrying about changing shit up too much, because she got mollywopped just the way she got mollywopped by Holm. And you know what? Saying that is, I don't think, an insult in my head, because it's a subjective thing. You got your ass kicked. Are you a great fighter? Yes. Is Ronda still one of the best women of all time? Of course. But yeah, that's I guess a topic we could save for a whole nother show, Ronda, and whether she will come back. Let's get to, oh yeah, I did also want to touch on some sad news. Matt Hughes, I think, still in the hospital. No word really. I mean, at this point, it's been, I think, nearly a week, which is a good sign, but apparently he was put in an induced coma and was really kind of in a bad way there for a while. I'm not sure, like I said, how he is now, but I think it's good that all this time has passed. Obviously, there's probably less a likelihood chance that the dude passes away, but he got hit by a train. He was driving his car and apparently got clipped on the passenger side. This is complete conjecture, and I'm in no way saying these are the facts of the case, but from what it sounds like, I guess the train hit the passenger side of his car and maybe around, like, the bed of the truck. So if you are getting T-boned by a train, either one of two things happened. You stopped on the tracks for no reason, which I don't think is the likelihood here. I think what he probably did is saw the train coming. From what I hear, this was in a very rural area. This wasn't in, like, the city or anything. Dude probably just saw the train, tried to outrun it, and got clipped and suffered because of it. And, again, that's not fact or anything, just kind of what I'm making out. I don't want to get sued for libel or anything. But, yeah, definitely prayers to the Hughes family and anything else or and anyone else over there. And of course, also to Tim Haig and his family. Tim wasn't so lucky. He did not make it. He had a boxing match. I don't know specifically. I don't have all the facts in front of me. Again, I would assume that, you hear people who die after fights. Usually it has something to do with the weight cut. And, you cut a lot of weight the day before, you're not going to have a lot of water in your body or your brain. And then you get knocked out and you can have a seizure and die. And from what it sounds like, that is not, I mean, I'm not sure on the weight part, but I guess Tim Haig, there's a video of the fight, and he stands up at, when the fight's over, even though he was on the ground for a while, and apparently he had a seizure backstage, was rushed to a hospital, and passed away. So, Tim Haig, from all accounts I've heard, was a great man, a great family guy. So definitely prayers to the Hugheses, prayers to the Haigs, everyone involved with both of those stories. Kind of a shitty week for the sport, as awesome as a weekend as it's looking like it's going to be with, Bellator 180 and UFC OKC, was definitely a little rough the last week or so in that respect. But we do have these cards to break down. Pat, I'll let you choose. Which one do you want to start with, Bellator or the UFC?
Well, let's go in chronological order. We got Bellator coming up first on Saturday, a rare day. We got Bellator on Saturday and UFC on Sunday. So, yeah, let's kick it off with Bellator.
Yeah, usually we do get Bellator before the UFC, but it's a Bellator Friday and a UFC Saturday. So, Bellator, the prelims on this start on Bellator.com. Not really anyone of note except for Ryan Couture. In fact, these 10 names, 5 fights, Ryan Couture is the only one I recognize. So all those fights will be on Bellator.com. The Bellator 180 later prelims will be on Spike TV. There are some names I've heard on that one. Chinzo Machida, a guy I saw fight live at RFA, I think it was RFA 11 or RFA 7. It was the one where he knocked out the guy so hard he broke the roof of his mouth. That's the craziest knockout I've seen in person. Chinzo Machida fighting James Gallagher. Also in the main event, you have a championship fight, which, if it wasn't such a stacked card, I would be, whining about why this wasn't on the pay-per-view card. But the pay-per-view already has 2 other titles and Aaron Pico's debut, and Sonnen, and Fedor, and Vanderlei, so I'm not that pissy about it. Phil Davis and Ryan Bader, Davis the champion, of course, at 205 in Bellator. Bader, the guy coming over from the UFC. These guys, yeah, that's right, they did fight about 2 years ago in the UFC, and it was a close fight, it was a split decision back January 24th, 2015, at that Gus versus Johnson card, they fought to a split decision in Sweden. So this will be a nice rematch between the two of them. Thoughts on the prelims before we move to the pay-per-view card?
Yeah, you know what? Going to be some good action, actually. This Bellator pay-per-view is stacked up pretty good. Ryan Couture definitely the most notable name, but should serve for some good scraps leading into the main card.
Yeah, and that main card, which I guess we'll start off. The computer sounds, but not my own mic there. We start off with Aaron Pico and Zach Freeman. Then the two title fights, Douglas Lima versus Lorenz Larkin, Michael Chandler versus Brett Primus. Thoughts on all of these, of course. Aaron Pico, if you haven't heard the name, is maybe the most highly touted MMA prospect since ever. I can't remember more hype behind someone than Aaron Pico, the 20-year-old who what hasn't he done? He's not going into collegiate wrestling. He decided to instead, you know, focus on getting better all around, being in MMA. The guy has gone up against dudes who in D1 wrestling have gone on to, like, not only win national titles, but Zane Rutherford won the most recent Dan Hodge Trophy, which is basically college wrestling's Heisman. Pico defeated Rutherford multiple times. Like, Pico's wrestling ability is crazy. The guy is a top flight boxer. The guy won the national Golden Gloves title in 2009, won the National Pancration Championship in 2008. The guy is, like, seems to be just, like, the prototype, you know, built, has all of these skills, is an insane wrestler, has hands, has been training for MMA since, you know, he was a teen. And now we finally get to see him in his first MMA fight in Bellator. So I do want to touch on the title fights too, but really quickly, Pat, do you believe the hype, Aaron Pico? Because there is a lot of it.
There's a ton. I mean, it's one of those ones of. I mean, he's got a very solid test. I mean, Zach Freeman 8-2. That's a good test on paper for a kid who is 0-0 as a professional in mixed martial arts, taking on a guy with 10 fights and a 80% win percentage. Definitely a solid test, but you know, we'll have to see. I mean, it's if he comes through looking like, you know, Michael Venom Page or something like that, and just starts laying waste to everybody in Bellator, I mean, I will believe the hype, but I mean, I don't know. Yeah, if he takes out Freeman in handy fashion, or I mean, heck, even just takes him out at all, if he gets a W, depending on the style in which he does, I mean, you certainly have to give some credence to that.
Yeah, you know, it's he, I think, has earned the moniker of the greatest MMA prospect ever. So we'll see how he does. He leads off the pay-per-view. We also have Douglas Lima fighting Lorenz Larkin. I'm very pumped for this too, because Lima has shown he is a equipped champion. But Lorenz Larkin, that guy is a monster. I mean, just he just got done TKOing Neil Magny in the first round. Not only is Neil Magny a good fighter, that guy's durable as shit. So to finish him in the first round, like, I don't think anyone has done that, really. I mean, even Damian Maya took him 2 rounds. So Lorenz Larkin, who has had a lot of ups and downs, you know, in 2014 had lost 3 fights in a row to Brad Tavares, Costa Philippou, and Derek Brunson, before going 4-1 in his last 5. Looking forward to that fight. And, of course, Michael Chandler. I mean, how could you not look forward to a Michael Chandler fight? You know, the guy seems to always just be in these back-and-forth wars, which it shocked me when I saw Chandler's odds on Best Fight Odds are minus 900. I mean, for a guy who gets rocked and hurt in seemingly every fight, I would expect little shittier odds than minus 700 or minus 900, but he is going up against Brett Primus, which I love his last name of Primus, but yeah, he is undefeated, beat Derek Anderson via split decision. That's really his capstone victory. 32-year-old from Eugene, Oregon, fighting out of Portland. You know, is he is an undefeated prospect. I'm still going Chandler, but shoot, I would throw a buck or two on this Primus guy just because it seems like everyone at some point in the fight has a chance with Michael Chandler, even though he doesn't lose very often at all. Lorenz Larkin, actually, the favorite in his fight against Lima to take the belt off of him. Phil Davis, a slight favorite, minus 125. I don't think they even have a line for the Pico fight just because he's such a crazy favorite in that one. But yeah, we got Lima and Chandler going out to defend their welterweight and lightweight belts. Aaron Pico making his MMA debut. Who you got? What you got in those?
Well, you know what? And I forgot, I neglected to mention my thoughts on the Phil Davis Ryan Bader rematch. Just the way that these fights are set up, I was not really expecting that kind of two UFC style, almost two different sets of prelims. They got the internet prelims, the TV Bellator 180 prelims or card, and then the Bellator pay per view portion. But I think as far as the light heavyweight, I think Ryan Bader is going to take that one. Going to the pay per view portion for the lightweight title. I'm also with you. I'm taking Michael Chandler, Brent Primus, undefeated prospect. And, you know, looking at both of them, just physically, as I look at them side by side, they almost look like the same person. I mean, maybe it's just me, but just the jaw, the angle, the nose, they almost look like the same dude. Ears almost out at the same side. So
if this fight gets canceled, we know why, because they're the same person.
Exactly, doppelgangers. But be that as it may, I think Chandler, although, as you mentioned, he has been known to get popped every now and then, he's also been known to come out and destroy people very early. That's been known to happen. Also been in some long wars and come out on top. I'm taking the more experienced Chandler to retain in this one. And then as far as the welterweight scrap for the world title, I'm thinking Vegas has it about right. I'm taking Lorenz Larkin, representing Riverside. I think he's taking out Douglas Lima in this one. Douglas, I mean, and this is going to be a great fight because they're both more striking inclined. Douglas Lima himself, more of a striker. I think this is going to be a great battle. I want to say Lima should have a little height and reach in this one. But both creative, both have the power to end it as well. Should be a good fight. Should be a close one. I think either of these guys could get the finish. But I'm going with Lorenz Larkin. I think he's going to take Lima out. I think he's going to get a TKO in this one. I'll say in the second round.
Ooh, you got a second round finish there. Before we do move on to the co-main and main event, I just wanted to very quickly remind everyone that we are brought to you by Lisa's Mattresses. Mattresses, 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 mattresses. Use promo code VMA Podcast for 0% off. We have the co-main event, Fedor versus Matt Mitrione here. This is, I think we've broken this fight down before recently because they were supposed to fight at like Bellator like 178 or 170 or what was it? Bellator, they were supposed to fight February 18th on whatever card that was. I don't know why they didn't just list the card. But yeah, they're supposed to go down, this is June, so 4 months ago in San Jose. However, hours before the fight, Mitrione was forced out due to kidney stones. Ouch. Has been rescheduled. I don't think anything has really changed. Of course, neither fighter has taken a fight since. Only 4 months have passed. They're both a little bit older, but I don't think it'll have any net effect on the fight. Matt being 38, Fedor being 40. Obviously, Fedor has many more fights under his belt. To be honest, I forget who I picked the first time around. The odds are very close. Odds are minus 115, Mitrione, minus 105, Fedor. So Mitrione, a slight as they come favorite. You won't double your money betting on either guy. Fedor's record is, to say the least, interesting. Starts his career undefeated through like 34 fights. Up until the turn of the deck. Wow, that's crazy to think that Fedor Verdum fight was almost to the day 7 years ago. Wow. Fedor was a legend for going on that crazy streak and never losing, fighting some of the best heavyweights in the world in both Rings and Pride and Affliction, and I guess one fight in Strikeforce before starting his losing streak. And he lost to Fabricio Werdum, Triangle Armbar, Bigfoot Silva, Dr. Stoppage, and Dan Hendo Henderson, who finished him with one of the most awkward KO angles you'll ever see. Hendo almost was in a spot where he probably would have been the more MMA thing to do to go for the rear naked choke, but instead Dan, being Dan, just goes to punch him in the head from behind him, from like the backpack position, and still knocks him out. It was unbelievable. Since then, though, Fedor has won 5 fights. Jeff Monson, Satoshi Ishii, Pedro Hizo, Jaideep Singh, and a controversial win against Fabio Maldonado. Matt Mitrione, on the other hand, 2 wins since joining Bellator. Before that, he had 2 losses to Rothwell and Travis Brown. Honestly, man, I think I'm just going to take Matt Mitrione, because that Fabio Maldonado fight with Fedor left a bad taste in my mouth. I mean, we all were expecting Fedor to kind of smash, and Fabio looked good. I think it was a pretty blatant robbery that Fabio didn't win that fight. I think Mitrione's probably a better fighter than Fabio Maldonado, so using my MMA math, which I try to avoid most of the time, but using MMA math, I'm taking meathead Matt Mitrione here over the last Emperor Fedor.
Man, this is such a tough fight for me to call, not only just because of the heavyweights, but because these are 2 of my favorite heavyweights. Mitrione, you know, I wasn't such a huge fan of his on, what was it, Tough 10? The heavyweight season.
Rampage versus Rashad, yep.
Rampage versus Rashad. That was, man, back when tough meant something, baby. And,
yeah, right?
You know, man, it was still somewhat fresh. 10 seasons in.
I think the Roy Nelson versus Kimbo Slice fight on that.
Oh, man.
On that season.
First fight of the season.
Not only is that the most watched tough fight ever, but I think that ranks up there, got more views than a lot of like pay-per-views the UFC did.
Oh man, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, the heavyweights, they draw. And it was good because that was the first time they'd ever done that weight class. So they had a large talent pool to skim from, you know. We're in tough 39 now, you know, so they've done everything 1.5 million times, and they've, you know, already scouted everybody 1.5 million times. So we're just getting, you know, fractionally better contestants. But anyways, I'm getting off the path here. Just big fan of both these guys. Been a fan of Fedor since forever. I'm still in shock that he lost to Werdum. I remember that fight. I remember watching that fight. I mean, that was a short fight too. The first round, Fedor drops Werdum. Jumps into his guard because that's what Fedor was doing. That's always who Fedor had been. And probably the one guy Fedor should not have jumped into the guard of, Fabricio Werdum, caught him in that triangle armbar and forced the tap. I've still never recovered. I don't know if Fedor has ever recovered from that. Almost every fight that I've seen him in where he has lost, I'm like, he should have won that fight. The Bigfoot Silva fight, I mean, That was a just TKO doctor stoppage. You know, the Henderson fight, again, he knocked down Henderson, which is why the angle got so weird, because Fedor had Henderson hurt. He had him in a bad way. He was coming in for the finish.
Yeah.
Henderson snuck out the back and, you know, just like you were saying, kind of just under the armpit, you know, while Fedor was kind of on all fours, just snuck it right under, right on the jaw, just snapped that neck back. He was certainly in a position to win most of those fights. And gosh, I want to say we were either doing a show or We were on Skype while we were watching, what was it, Eurasia Fight Nights, or whatever the name of that promotion was, with Fabio Maldonado and Fedor. And yeah, Fedor almost got finished by Fabio Maldonado in that fight. Very lucky to have not. He survived and got quite the interesting decision in his favor. That was just quite a spectacle. But I don't know that he's going to get the same treatment in Bellator. Now, part of me says, again, styles make fights. Fabio Maldonado, gentleman similar size to Fedor. What Mitch Rione will have in his advantage with the height and the striking, and his striking game is very good. He's got lots of weapons, too. He's good with the kicks as well as the punches. But Fedor, being a little bit shorter, he's going to have that low center of gravity. So if he's going to sambo his ass up, which we know that is not Mitch Rione's forte, is the grappling game. He's been prone to it. There's a good potential that Fedor can, rest him to the ground and maybe put some ground and pound on him or get a submission. Man, I can really see this one going either way. Hate picking this fight. God damn, I'll go with Mitch Rione as well, though. I'll go with Mitch Rione as well. I don't know what it is. I think I can see him getting it done in this one. I think the striking and the range will come into play, and old Meathead will get the KO over the Last Emperor. That's just how I'm seeing that one.
And I feel like for the same reason your longest reigning champ is at the lightest weight class, I feel like you see the heavier you go, the more parity you see, as in, the more often you see the shittier fighter winning. Not necessarily. That's a little harsh a term, because when you have a fighter who's like, like an 86 out of 100 fight a guy who's like an 85 out of 100, and you're like, oh, you're the shittier one. Like, no, they're very close. But heavyweight is a division where anything can happen. Moving on to light heavyweight, a fight that we were supposed to see years and years ago, Chael Sonnen and Wanderlei Silva. They did that whole tough Brazil season about it. We never got to see it. Today, at a stare down, Wanderlei shoved Chael. The bad blood was there, has been there, is still there. And it looks like we finally get to see a close to the rivalry of Chael versus Wanderlei. And that is our main event. And it really shows you. It really shows you. Money talks in this sport, man. You got three title fights. One of them has Phil Davis and Ryan Bader, two of the most high-profile free agents you just signed from the UFC. Throw that on the prelims. Fuck it. You have the debut of the greatest MMA prospect of all time. You have Michael Chandler and Douglas Lima, both champions, defending their belts. You have Fedor Emelianenko, someone who a lot of people used to argue is the best ever. A lot of people still do argue is the best heavyweight ever. You have all these fights, and the main event is Chael Sonnen versus Wanderlei Silva. Chael Sonnen, 40 years old, who, since losing to Rashad Evans in 2013, 4 years ago, fought once and got rear-naked choked by Tito Ortiz. Wanderlei Silva, also 40 years old, since 2013, just hasn't fought. Has zero fights since beating Brian Stann back in March 2013. In fact, since that Kung Lee fight in 2011, he's only fought twice. He fought Rich Franklin and Brian Stann, and that was it. So, basically going back 4 years, the only fight either one of these guys have is Chael getting choked out by Tito Ortiz in 2 minutes. So, I'm not about to bash Chael, one of my favorites ever, and Wanderlei, one of the best ever. But this is starting to border on Hoist Shamrock 7 levels. I mean, look, there's still 40, which it's not near as bad as, you know, when you made Kent Shamrock step back in the cage at, like, age 86. But, you know, it really shows you money talks, because this is the like, there's probably more buzz around this fight than any other fight just because of the bad blood, just because Chael runs his mouth. Chael is the... Chael was Conor before Conor was Conor, and now Chael is Bellator's Conor. And going up against Wanderlei Silva, who himself seems very trollable. You say anything to him, and he gets all worked up. So it's a very marketable situation there. And yeah, I mean, does this fight even deserve a technical breakdown? Like, we know Chael's the wrestler, Wanderlei's the striker. Both of them will probably be on Googleplex amounts of steroids and human growth hormone. Yeah, let's see a bunch of jacked up 40-year-old legends go and beat the shit out of one another. I'm gonna take Sonnen all day. Not only do I think he has the mental game won, but he has the wrestling. And usually, when it comes down to a style matchup between anything and wrestling, I go with wrestling, and that usually works out for me. Chael actually had some pretty funny tweets recently saying, Wanderlei, prepare to eat more right hands than Jeffrey Dahmer. Wanderlei, you're going to spend so much time in your back, your new name will be Wanderlei Kardashian. And that one's kind of corny. Wanderlei, your eyes is going to be more shut than Charlie Sheen's medicine cabinet. Again, a little old, a little corny. I'm going to get you more wobbled than Tiger Woods at a DUI checkpoint. That's good. That's topical. Wanderlei Silva is the only fighter with cauliflower face. That's just rude, but it's hilarious. That's hilarious.
That is a burn.
Burn. Wow. So yeah, this will be a fun card overall. What do you make of the main event, the Westland gangster versus the axe murderer?
Oh, Jake, well, all those zingers that you just ran through.
Zing, 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 zing.
Zing, just zing after zing. That is why our boy Chael Sonnen is main eventing this card over so many other people that probably should be. Chael Sonnen was talking his way into the big fights. It's people, I don't know, give it a couple years and with what McGregor has done, people have forgotten that Chael Sonnen was the dude doing that. He was talking his way into these fights, getting undeserved title shots and headlining gigs and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, he was doing pretty well for himself there, you know, not quite backing it up like McGregor, but man, he almost took out Anderson Silva at the peak of his prime, was this close. I didn't even think he'd be able to hang as many rounds as he did, let alone dominate as many rounds as he did. So, you know, he earned a bit of my respect back then with that. You know, he kind of like the Angela Magana thing, you know, probably shouldn't be talking that shit, but still talking that shit. And, you know, is not going to say, no, that wasn't me talking that shit. They're going to be like, yeah, you know what? It was me talking that shit. What's good? And we're going to fight either way. I may win, I may lose, but I'm talking that shit. Fairly respectable there. And you know what? Also with you, Jake, I feel with the wrestling, as far as the stylistic breakdown, if we're going to do that, you know, that's so much of the battle in MMA these days and has been as MMA has continued to evolve in since the golden era, if you will. Just whoever's able to control the pace and where the fight goes, you know, that's going to be the person who can win, the person with the better wrestling proficiency, theoretically would have a better chance to take the fight where they want that fight to go and keep that fight where it's comfortable for them. I love your use of the word Googleplex. I hope that some of our listeners are Googling that. Or looking that up if they're not familiar with that. Googleplex is a legit word and was in the dictionary back before the internet existed. Love that. Love those throwback words. And yeah, that is probably the correct amount of steroids that these guys are going to be on. It'll be good, you know, just to make a competitive, nice level playing field for them. It should be an interesting fight for the main event. I could see Vanderlei coming out and doing his bombs. I'm sure he wants to murder Chael Sonnen for all of his Brazilian diatribes over the years, and his diatribes aimed directly at Vanderlei himself. There has just been so much shit talking over the years. There's no way this one can't be pretty good. Should be a nice capstone to the card for sure.
Yeah, it really should be. It's not the fight. What is the Batman link? Batman quote. It's not the fight we want. It's the fight we deserve, or something. I don't know. But yeah, this fight maybe doesn't have the technical prowess as you will see in other fights on this card. But hey, people will be talking about it for sure. UFC Fight Night 112, final topic of the night before we send it out. Chase versus Lee. This was fun at the presser where Lee punched Chase in the face after calling out his mom, which again, I know I mentioned it after the presser, but you can't call out someone's mom and then rush him and punch him in the face. If you call out someone's mom, you can't be the first to throw a punch. Like, come on. But that aside, a lot of fights on this card. This is going to be a good weekend. We'll start with the prelims like we usually do. Carlos Sparza returning to fight Marina Moroz. A bunch of no-names on the UFC Fight Pass card as usual. How about this fight, which, Pat, I swear to God, I'm not just choosing a random fight from 2013 and saying they're doing it this weekend, but Clay Guida and Eric Koch will be fighting each other this weekend. No, it is not 2013. It is 2017. Both of them have had extended periods off, which I think for fighters is a very good thing. Guida has fought, has not fought the last year. Before that, it was like another year, his most recent fight being a KO loss to Brian Ortega. The guy's six fights, loss, win, loss, win, loss. He really needs another win on his record. Dude was flying high after he beat Pettis back June 2011, but since then, he's what? He's like 3-6 in his last nine. Not too good. All of them in the UFC. The guy's got a lot of UFC fights. And in this featherweight match, going up against Eric Koch, who has one fight since 2014, a win against Shane Campbell. Back like 2011, 2012, I know he was originally slotted in a title shot against Jose Aldo. That did not end up happening. Instead, he took fights against Ricardo Lamas and Dustin Poirier, which he lost. Another one to Derek Cruikshank, which he lost. So rough times for Eric Koch, looking to get back in the win column against Quay Guida. Any thoughts on the prelims before we get to the main card?
Oh, little Quay.
Little Quay Guida, what you gonna do? Oh, cry about it. I actually saw him at the House of Blues in Chicago. It was like 2 months after the Gray Maynard fight, and he was standing in the corner of the House of Blues, just mean mugging everyone. Which, hey, I probably would too, because at that point in time, everyone was just trashing on him so hard for
that was a bad fight,
Caleb Starnes esque performance against Gray Maynard. But yeah,
that was crazy.
Prelims.
Yeah, prelims. As you said, not the most familiar name. I mean, Tony Martin versus Johnny Case. Both fighters do have a Wikipedia. I'm actually vaguely familiar with Tony Martin and Johnny Case. They've been around a little bit.
Tony Martin did that Live in La Vida Loca shit, right?
Yes, yes, and she bangs.
She bang. God, the references in this episode are getting so off the wall at this point.
Wow. Apologies to anyone still listening.
I was about to drop a William Hung reference on him, but I don't think they're ready.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. I don't think they're ready for that one.
No. I don't know that I am. Vitor Miranda versus Marvin Vittori. I'm really liking that middleweight scrap. Old Lex Luthor. I've become a big fan of his as of late. Really seems to be a scrapper. Esparza versus Moroz. Great fight at 115 pounds. Carla, she's another fighter. We haven't seen her in a while, it feels like. Last fight was just 4 months ago against Randa Marcos. Lost a split decision. But yeah, she's fighting it about once a year, it seems like. She had one fight in 2016 back in April, one fight in 2015. That was when she lost her belt to Yuen and Jacek. That was March 14th, 2015. Before that, December 12th, 2014. Before that, January 5th, 2013. So this is going to be the first year and since 2012, her first year in 5 years, she's fighting twice in a year. Hopefully she can get some consistency there, either in victory or in just making it to the octagon, making it to the cage to fight. She does have a solid test in Marina Moroz. I mean, Moroz is 3-1 in the UFC, only having lost to Valerie Letourneau. Coming off a split decision win over Danielle Taylor. She's been out of the ring a little bit herself, actually coming up on 10 months here. Hasn't fought since the Rodriguez versus Caceres event in Salt Lake City. But certainly has been more active and been getting the W's more recently than Carla. Going to be a good fight. I was incredibly surprised when I saw Clay Guida and Eric Koch as the featured bout on the Fox Sports 2 prelim portion of the card. I was like, fantastic. I didn't know either of them were still in the UFC. Glad to see it. I mean, Clay Guida, he caught a lot of heat for the Gray Maynard fight. That was just a notoriously hard fight to watch. That was a really tough fight. But still, in spite of that, I think Clay Guida is still a fan favorite. The fans still, you know, like Clay Guida, be it in the cage or outside of the octagon. He's a fan favorite. Eric Koch.
It's so wild that someone with such aggression, someone who's put on such exciting wars, someone who, you know, is known to be some savage guy, "Oh, punch me all you want and I'll fire back." It's crazy that guy was just running from Gray during that fight. And, you know, too like Guida, but I'm for sure going to take Koch in this fight. I think Koch, Vegas also sees him as a big favorite, minus 340.
Minus 340 for Koch?
Big time, yeah.
Wow, that's very amazing. I mean,
they're
I don't
in
know.
Love with the Koch.
That they are, and, you know, with good cause. I mean, Koch is a good talent. He's a solid all-around fighter. Definitely some good hands. He's got some good ground game as well. But just the pressure of Clay Guida, man, that might be my money bet of the card. If Clay Guida is that big of an underdog, you never know. Clay Guida, he's always a live dog, and just the pressure, the way he fights, unless he gets just knocked clean out, which is hard to do. It's very hard to stop Clay Guida, but if Koch would have to do that, because it's typically and traditionally just that Guida pressure. I mean, I don't know. We'll really have to see what his strategy is looking like coming out to this. I think if we get a classic Clay Guida performance, I could see him stealing this one from the judges, getting a 29-28 in this one. And you know what? Screw it. For old time's sake, I think I will pick Guida over Koch here.
And this,
I think it'll be fantastic, though.
Taking Guida. That moves us to the main card. Speaking of guys, you know, who are around a lot back then, you don't hear of much now. BJ Penn taking on Dennis Seaver. BJ Penn, my favorite fighter ever, coming back for yet another fight. And he's going to be an underdog again. I think he for sure has a better chance against Dennis Seaver than he did in any of his last four fights against Nick Diaz, Rory McDonald, Frankie Edgar, Yair Rodriguez. But it's just, man. It's just, it hurts as a Penn fan, man. We had that high watermark of Diego Sanchez at UFC 107 getting his eye head kicked open in the fifth round there. I think that was Penn's like third title defense or something. He was riding high after that. Since then, since knocking out Diego Sanchez, he has one win, six losses, and one draw. Man, I wish he had hung up his gloves after the Diaz, McDonald, Edgar, and now Rodriguez fight. You know, it's like, what does this win do for BJ? I hope if he does get the win, it gives him kind of the closure he needed. Because this isn't good to see a legend go out. You know, we thought he was done after Rory. He came back for one more fight against Frankie. Got just his ass demolished. Same thing against Yair. Once again, you know, he'll have a much better chance against Dennis Seaver. But, I don't know. It's just hard to be optimistic as a Penn fan these days. Even though I still for sure am picking him. You got Tim Means and Alex Garcia. A couple explosive welterweights. I'm going to make sure to catch this one, because this is going to be a banger. Tim Means, big favorite. The Dirty Bird, minus 250 in Vegas. Joaquin Christensen and Dominique Reyes. Dominique Reyes, a pretty interesting prospect. You know, these last few weeks, we've seen a lot of young prospects at 205, which I really love seeing. The Devastator, only 27 years old, undefeated, 6-0, taking on Joaquin Christensen. And then we get up into the top half of the main card. My future ex-wife, Felice Herrig, taking on Justine Kish, and Tim Boach versus Johnny Hendricks. Johnny's second fight at middleweight. He beat Hector Lombard in his 185-pound debut, now taking on Tim Boach. I have Johnny in this one, too. I think Johnny's, you know, we both have been riding Johnny's dick for a while now. Just the guy's got a combination that you gotta love. High class wrestling and some stiff power. So anyone who can combine heavy hands with a very, very good knowledge of wrestling is gonna be dangerous in the cage. Wow, we are already at 90 minutes, even though I guess we're almost done wrapping up our last topic here. We've both been very verbose. A lot of fights to break down, a lot of cards to break down. But yeah, that is my co-main pick. I'm taking Johnny Hendricks along with Felice Herrig, Dominique Reyes, Tim Means, and the prodigy BJ Penn.
Well, solid picks all the way throughout. I really can't fault you for that lineup. I mean, really, this is just a card filled with live dogs, though. I mean, any one of these guys I could see taking. Who let the live dogs out? We need to work that up.
See, Zuffa would have worked perfect. Zuffa, now, obviously.
Right? It's almost like the onomatopoeia. Like,
William Morris Entertainment. Like... William Morris. I don't know. It doesn't work as well.
No, it doesn't roll off the tongue. But, I mean, BJ, really, this is... If any fight is winnable for him these days, I'd say it's a fight against Dennis Seaver. Dennis Seaver himself is on a two-fight losing streak, hasn't fought in, it will be over 2 years. And this is a guy who is right there, BJ's height, weight, size, reach, everything like that. You know, BJ, his last few fights, age. The fight against Nate, Yair, you know, he's had that long reach to overcome. and plus just the styles and everything like that. I mean, Dennis Siver doesn't fight like Frankie Edgar. Granted, that could be a good or a bad thing. I mean, Frankie Edgar doesn't throw the kind of kicks that Dennis Siver does. You know, who knows? BJ might get a kick in the chops if he's not expecting it from old Dennis Siver. But then again, BJ, he's still got that power. He could certainly reach out, put one or two on the hands of Siver, and get a little KO victory. Would not be surprised. Or even if you were to try the grappling route. I mean, we're talking about BJ Penn, one of the original gangster American black belts in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. There's always that possibility. BJ Penn, man, you know what? I'm picking him over Siver. I've got no reason to pick Siver at this point. Siver got no momentum. He's on a 2-fight losing streak. Hasn't fought in years. I'm going with BJ Penn just by default. You know, he's got that clout. Tim Means versus Alex Garcia. Got to go with the Dirty Bird. Shouts out to the Dirty Bird. He's going to come in there flocking with that Muay Thai style. Just knees, bows. He's got a pronounced height and reach advantage over the Dominican Nightmare, Alex Garcia. But the Dominican Nightmare, they call him such because he is a tough bastard. He's got the hands. He's got the power. And he can really he can knock somebody's block off, man. It's going to be a very scrappy fight. As you had mentioned, not one you want to miss. I'm going with the Dirty Bird in that one. Joaquin Christensen versus Dominic Reyes. Some good light heavyweight prospects, as you had mentioned. Joaquin Christensen, he is, I want to say he's 1-2. Yeah, he's 1-2 in the UFC. Taking on Dominic Reyes, who is making his UFC debut. Undefeated light heavyweight. Cutting his teeth a little bit in LFA. Had a nice first round head kick knockout less than a minute in. Doing some big things. Let's see if he can live up, if he can continue that success in the UFC here. Herrick versus Kish. Man, I like Felice Herrick.
Me too.
Not the guys like Felice Herrick. But she really does seem to have made strides since her last couple fights over the years. You know, I'd seen an article with her where she said she wasn't sure about the UFC's plans with her. And I think it's just, you know, get some consistency, get another fight or two, another win or two under your belt, because Felice Herrick getting absolutely tooled by Paige VanZant isn't that far away in my memory. I do seem to remember her getting completely handled by a 20-year-old girl. In every aspect of the game. So, you know, let's not rush into that title shot talk. She's got a tough fight up here with the undefeated Justine Kish. And if she can navigate that, maybe put another win together again, get that consistency going, that would be something. But this is going to be a great match. You know, this is another girl who's not too dissimilar from Felice herself. You know, has a kickboxing background, 18-2, I want to say the record was, and she's undefeated in MMA, so this is going to be a tough fight for both girls, and solid scrap. And Boach versus Hendricks, I mean, I don't know if there is a more live underdog than Tim Boach. Tim Boach is the one that just... the intangibles. There's really so many, and so many of the fights were his come from behind knockouts versus Okami or, you know, whoever it may be. He's just, you look at the fight and you say, man, this isn't looking too good for the Barbarian. But, and then you're watching the fight and you're like, yeah, this is kind of playing out exactly as I'm thinking it would have. But then he just is able to rally. The Brad Tavares knockout as well, I want to say. That was another good come-from-behind one there. But he's been known to do it. And Johnny Hendricks, I'm still not completely sold. You know, he really... Yeah, we were certainly riding the old Johnny Hendricks D pretty hard. I mean, especially I was going into the Wonder Boy Thompson fight, man. But since then, not so much. And in fact, I'm really not even. I'm not super sold, man. I mean, this is gonna be a stout test for Johnny Hendricks. Tim Boach is a big 185. These guys are. I mean, I don't know. I can't wait to see the weigh-ins on Saturday because I don't feel like these guys are the same size. The Barbarian, I don't know if he's going to be able to throw him around like he would any other middleweight. I mean, he's got the NCAA Division I championship credentials, but I don't believe he was wrestling at 185 pounds against guys the size of Tim Boach.
Boach is 6 foot tall with a 74-inch reach. Hendricks is 5'9 with a 69-inch reach.
There we go. So, yeah, definitely a little bit of mass in the favor of the Barbarian there, and he certainly got the power. Man, this is a tough fight. I dare say I want to pick Boach in this one, but I'm gonna pick Johnny. I'll put it out there. I say I'm going with Hendricks right now.
You're going Johnny Hendricks. That brings us to the main event. Michael Chiesa and Kevin Lee. Both of them have looked very good of recent. Michael Chiesa, three-fight winning streak. Mitch Clark, Jim Miller, and Benny Eldarush. We do remember that controversial doctor stoppage loss to Joe Lauzon he had before that. Kevin Lee on a four-fight win streak, defeating Efrain Escudero, Jake Matthews, Magomed Mustaev, and Francisco Trinaldo. Here's why I'm picking Kevin Lee, because I feel like Michael Chiesa's biggest weapon is getting you on the ground and subbing you. Kevin Lee has very good ground game, especially defense. I mean, and even offense. You look at his last two fights, both of them wins by rear naked choke. The one against Magomed Mustaev, he choked him to sleep. So Chiesa, I think his ground prowess is going to be pretty negated by Kevin Lee. Lee, on the other hand, has some big hands, and Michael Chiesa has shown not necessarily an iron chin and getting knocked out. He's never been knocked out, unless you count the doctor stoppage against Joe Lauzon, but he does get hit. Pardon me. And,
Salute.
I think Lee is going to hit him. I think Lee, who is the slight favorite, I think he's already kind of won the mental war going into it. And I am giving it to Kevin Lee. I don't know if we see another finish, but I see maybe a unanimous decision where Kevin Lee keeps it standing. Even if he gets taken down, I think he can get it back to standing pretty quick. He's shown a really good scramble, really good wrestling defense, and I think he gets this win against Michael Chiesa.
Well, Jake, that's a good breakdown there. I really find it hard to poke any holes in your analysis there. Really, my only thing is just, damn it. And really, for me, I really
enjoyed. Vegas has the odds very close, so I don't think there's one standout guy here. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Chiesa won.
No, and nor would I. And really, if you want to do MMA, Matt, gosh, I'm not sure. I know they had Iaquinta as a common opponent, who Chiesa did choke unconscious, and Iaquinta did defeat Kevin Lee.
Although, Chiesa fought him 5 years ago, Lee fought him three and a half years ago, so.
Yeah, well, both of those fights were some time ago, really. June of 2012 for Chiesa versus Iaquinta, and then what, like, very early 2014?
Yeah, that actually was Chiesa and Iaquinta's both official UFC fight. That was at the Tough Live finale.
Yeah, that was a good season, too. That was a good season.
Very good season. A lot of people still in the UFC from that season.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Chiesa, he's certainly done well. I mean, his only loss is, as you mentioned, the TKO to Joe Lauzon, the doctor stoppage, and the the submission to Jorge Masvidal, who, you know, Masvidal, he's up there doing big things at 170 pounds now. And he's on a nice three-fight winning streak himself, submitting Jim Miller and Beniel Dariush. Beniel Dariush, a very high-level grappler himself. Man, I don't know. This is a very tough one. I certainly, I mean, Kevin Lee has always looked like a good prospect since he came out. I mean, aside from his setback in his debut against Iaquinta, he came back from that, rattled off four straight. He was looking very good. Had kind of a freakish TKO loss to Leonardo Santos, known more as a grappling expert, and basically just knocked him out in the first round, not known for his striking whatsoever. But has since come back. He's got another four wins in a row. Usurped some of the strength from Masaran Duba, submitting Francisco Trinaldo, who was on a great winning streak himself in his last fight. So, man, Lee's definitely going places. I'll tell you what, I am hoping that Chiesa wins, because that's a bum move. When you're at the press conference, you bring up another dude's mom completely unprovoked, and then the dude rushes you and you're throwing first at him when you're the one who's bringing up mothers. Man, that's, you know, I understand trash talking and hyping the fight. Go after the fighter. That's just me. That's just my, you know, talk about him. That's really, I mean, I don't know. There's no rules to the game of trash talk, really. But for me, you know, I'm like, ooh, that's just a little bit. Just a little bit outside of what you should be for hyping up a fight. Again, if you, you know, want to make a person say, man, Michael Chiesa looks stupid as hell, his beard looks like a bird shit on his face or something like that, I would laugh. I would be laughing very hard. And I would probably then still laugh if you then punched him in the face. I was like, man, he said he looks like he's got bird shit on his face. And then he punched him in the face. This is the best press conference ever. But once you start talking about mothers, that's when it gets unclassy. I've got lines. I've got boundaries. But I don't know. Dang it. Will Chiesa be able to restore that family honor, the name that has been besmirched? Apparently, yet again, Kevin Lee bringing up mothers in recent press conferences. Oh, my goodness. Maybe could be some perhaps a psychological warfare tactic by Kevin Lee trying to get into Michael's head. And trying to get him unsettled before the Sunday card. But, oh, man, this really is such a tough fight. Vegas has it close. I'm seeing it pretty close. I do, oh, and I'm very torn. I'm going to have to flip a coin on this one. As bad as I want Chiesa to win, I think Lee's going to win it, though. I think, as you said, he's got the hands. He's got some good grappling defense as well. Styles make fights, and I think that, son of a bitch, I don't know, man, so many underdogs. I want Chiesa to win this one so bad. You know what, screw it. Kevin Lee ain't winning. Chiesa's winning. That is my final answer. I'm saying it. He's going to get the choke out third round.
Going with the mama's boy, Michael Chiesa. And I do agree with what you said. You don't bring up a guy's mom. But what Kevin Lee did was perfect, because I'm looking back
textbook.
And I'm looking up the exact line. This is what Kevin Lee said verbatim, and this is what caused the brawl. This is what made Mike Chiesa go absolutely nuclear. Quote, "He's going to headline because of me. After that, he's going back to the prelims. But I just hope he shows up, because I know his mama's got tickets." That's all he said. So he did something which was brilliant. He did break a rule of you don't bring up a guy's mom, which I do agree. Like obviously he patronizingly brought up the guy's mother, which is a shitty thing to do. But guess what? You're about to be throwing hands with this guy. It's okay if you do a couple shitty things between now and then. And I think he did it in the perfect way. He did it enough to where he got inside Mike's head. He made him go nuclear. He made him stand up and go, "Don't ever talk about my fucking mom." I think he screamed that 7 times in a row. Like, just went fucking nuts. Over what? He didn't say. He literally did not say anything. That would be like, I mean, that's such an innocent comment. I hope you show up because I know your mom has got tickets. Like, but I don't know. I think he played it off well. I've never seen anyone just go from 0 to 100 that quick at a presser. It was hilarious. But yeah, that's all I have. One last thing before we shut everything down this week. And still up in the air when next week's episode will be. Monday, if we can swing it. If not, follow the Twitter like usual. I just want to talk really quickly about all the Wolf tickets and all the bullshit that people are going to be trying to feed you for this Floyd versus Conor fight. And I will heed you this warning now. I will probably say it in future weeks to come. Folks, do not buy the Wolf tickets. And I hope that was picked up on the mic. But look, it's just, I've heard so many ridiculous false angles on this fucking fight. I heard a guy on TV recently saying, Conor is obviously just going to get frustrated in the third round and throw a spinning heel kick and knock out Floyd, and it'll be hilarious. And it's like, sorry about that, but if Conor throws a kick or an elbow or any illegal strike, he's not going to get his purse. So don't expect any illegal strikes in the match. I heard another genius talking about, Conor has perfected the spinning back fist. The spinning, like, and that's going to work against Floyd. And no boxer has tried the spinning back fist on Floyd. And do you know what would happen if someone tried a spinning back fist on fucking Floyd? Not only would they miss harder than Chael Sonnen missed in the Anderson Silva rematch, but you'd probably get knocked out just as fast as Chael did, too. I mean, he would pull counter the shit out of that move. Floyd would every single time. Just, I'm hearing everything from, all these people saying Conor has no chance are haters. Like, yeah, that's exactly what I am. I'm a hater because I think somebody making their pro boxing debut is going to get absolutely shithoused by the greatest boxer of our generation.
Haterade,
yeah. So, I don't know. I just wanted to talk about that and... Look, when you are going to hear a lot of people try and sell you these Wolf tickets, and look, I'm not saying don't watch the fight, because, you know, I for sure will watch the fight, and if anything, what I'm doing now is promoting it. But at the same time, when you tune into that fight, know what you're tuning in for. Know this is more keeping up with the Kardashians than it is an actual boxing fight. If you want an actual boxing fight, wait another month. You'll get Canelo versus Golovkin. That'll be amazing. Conor versus Floyd is a sideshow. It'll be an entertaining sideshow, and it'll make a ton of money, but be aware of what it is. That's all I have. And I guess we will, just south of 2 hours. A long show this week. Getting ready for the Vegas trip in 2 weeks. Your boy will be at the MGM. Hopefully your boys will be at the MGM. And if you are listening and planning on being in Vegas at UFC 213, I actually had someone holler at me, but if you weren't that person and you're also going to be in Vegas, tweet me. We'll get a cold beer or something. Have fun there waiting on the fights. There is a card Friday and Saturday at the T-Mobile Arena. And I don't think I'm going to check out till Monday because that drive west from Vegas during Sunday, I've heard, is a nightmare. So I'm giving the world my travel plans. If you're going to be in Vegas, let's meet up for a cold beer. Sweet Pappy Jones might be there too. Pat, you have anything else for the people before we leave it till next week?
Well, Jake, just wanted to say thank you again for bringing me on here. And as we like to say, what was it? Stay healthy.
Stay healthy.
Keep your nose to the grindstone.
Nose to the grindstone. Hell yeah. Do it up. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. We appreciate the shit out of you for listening. And until then, we gone. Happy birthday, Mom. I love you.